Jala and the Beast. Written by Late Stage Infernalism. Narrated by Zinli. Jala walked up the wooded slope of the fog-shrouded mountain, eyes moving quickly side to side. She knew that as the forest thickened, so did the risks. Both the risk of being attacked and the risk of being stopped. She'd worked hard to achieve her position in the Order of the Wardens. Briar and I didn't sound too impressive, she admitted, and she knew that she didn't look much like the latter half of her title. Short, wiry, worn green cloak covering well-used deerskin trousers and shirt, hood covering her unevenly cut, dirty blonde hair, pack slung casually over one shoulder, small heavy-bladed sword on her hip, as useful for clearing brush as killing men, and of course, her bow, unstrung on her back. She looked more like a poacher than a tested defender of the peace. But Jala was a defender, and if her oath did not allow her to take this act in defense of another, then she would gladly break it. From the moment that she heard word of the Rurik's disappearance, she had tracked the beast's movements. His movements. He was still a man, even if he could no longer think like one. One of his last conscious acts had been to come out here straight into the middle of nowhere. She knew why he had done so. He was dangerous now, and wanted to be very far away from the most vulnerable prey, the villagers in the valley below. Jala had been well-drilled in keeping her sinew bowstring dry and keeping the bow itself unstrung when it wasn't needed, to maintain its elasticity and the strength of its pull. But now, she was in danger, at least as she understood it. She could feel the presence of the great predator here, even if it was still miles away. There wasn't any birdsong, and the squirrels in the ground game were sparse. The only sound was the soft patter of the cool drizzle. The lack of the animals made her tread on the soft pine needles seem loud to her, and the conifers themselves felt like lonely towers guarding nothing in particular. She had decided, however, that she would ignore this evidence and her gut feeling. She didn't want to be tempted if the beast himself showed up. That wasn't why she was here. Besides, walking into the forest prepared for battle would piss off the druid, who was the other problem. Technically, the Order of the Wardens answered to druids. In practice, the strange men and women of the woods merely provided guidance, most of the time. Save in times of war with the unnatural, or in situations where their occult knowledge would prove more useful than tactics or stealth. But the village of Stone Peak had formally told the local village headman that the mountain itself, and all the creatures that dwelled on it, natural or otherwise, were under his protection. On the bright side, that meant that no lucky huntsman would kill the beast before Jala got there. On the downside, it meant that technically she needed the Old One's permission to act. Normally, Jala would do what she came here to do, and beg forgiveness if she lived. But the druid might interfere, and that could prove fatal in and of itself. She shuddered thinking of how that could work out, of the things that a mage might do if they thought they were helping. So Jala had to approach the druid, and either tell him the truth or tell him a lie. Neither was particularly appealing to her. Both had their risks. Putting off her decision, she kept her eyes moving and forced her perceptions, opening her mind to nature. The magic of the Order of the Wardens was subtle, but it had its own power. She was a forest ghost, and had any witnesses been there to see her, they might not even have noticed her, despite the fact that she took the path. Such were her skills that she had drifted right in front of wide-awake sentries before without being seen. This time, however, she was simply trying to prevent herself from being ambushed. She knew that the druid would sense her long before she found him, wherever he was. As it turned out, she required neither caution nor alertness. The druid's high tent, well-kept and semi-permanent, was right at the end of the path. There was no way that anyone could miss it. Beyond it lay the forest proper, and then the steep mountainside and the snow-capped peaks. Smoke issued out of the hole in the top of the tent, and something spicy was being cooked within. Druids did not have to worry about rain putting out their fires. "Hail, Old One," said Jala, not quite shouting the traditional greeting, but putting enough force in her voice to show her confidence.
"Hail, young wanderer," a hearty voice answered. "Come in, eat, and rest by my fire." It wasn't entirely the traditional response, but it was close enough. Jala slipped inside the tent. She set her pack down and gently placed her bow beside it, then unstrapped her sword, still in its sheath, and put it down too. The formalities of greeting and disarming aside, she approached the figure who sat near, but not at the fire. As her eyes adjusted to the dark, she could make him out better. The druid was not as old as she had expected, just beyond 5 decades, more than twice Jala's age. His brown hair was a bit wild, but had no gray in it. He wore a simple brown tunic and pants, and his face was partially hidden by a great beard. What skin she could see was weather-beaten, but not as dark as Jala's. His eyes were deep and sorrowful. She felt herself exposed to him, all her secrets laid bare in his gaze. She grudgingly decided that she would have to tell him the truth. "Welcome. I have clean water for you in the pail there, and some dried fish and berries to break your fast if you wish."
"Thank you," she said sincerely, seeing the wooden bucket with a cup beside her. She drew forth some water with the cup and drank it. It was fresh and crisp and cool, probably pulled from a nearby stream. As she did so, the man busied himself going to other parts of the tent and finding a rough wooden plate, which he covered with a variety of foods. Not just the fish and berries that he had promised, but also some recently gathered herbs and roots. For a few minutes, Jala ate. She did so quickly, but not rudely. The flavors were good, and although the roots and herbs were bitter, she knew that the druid had included them for her health, so she consumed them. To do otherwise would show distrust and disrespect. Finally done, she set the plate down in front of her.
"To business, then," he said.
She simply nodded.
"I am Torrid," he continued, "and I hold dominion in this mountain in service of the old gods."
"I am Jala, and I am here... I'm here as a warden, but not in their service." Torrid raised an eyebrow before replying.
"I know you must hold your duty sacred, but I will not allow you to hunt the beast that lives in this mountain. I have given him permission to reside here, so long as he harms none, and therefore he is in my care."
"You know as well as I do that it is only a matter of time before he kills. He'll go down through that valley and into the village. There will be more corpses than living souls there in a few nights."
Torrid sighed and then nodded. "I cannot disagree with your assessment, Warden Jala, but I still will not allow any hunt."
I'm not here to hunt him. I'm here for the right," Jala said, feeling the heat rush to her face.
"For the right?" Torrid asked, as if he did not know.
The infuriating old man was going to make her say it out loud.
"Yes,
the rite of the wolf priestesses. What they did to solve problems like this."
"You are not a wolf priestess," Torrid pointed out.
Jala scoffed. "Maybe not, but we both know that there wasn't much nuance to what they did. They called it a sacred ritual, but it was a lot simpler than that."
Perhaps it is simple as you say, but it is not easy. They had years of training and secret arts to guide them. And even then, they did not always survive the experience. What makes you think that you have even the slimmest chance of success?"
Jala reached inside her shirt and took out her medallion, tossed it to Torrid, careful not to break eye contact with this damn irritating old man. It was the only symbol of her rank within the wardens. "That's how I'll survive it. I'm not some damned little stripling seed that you can chew from your peak, old one. I am a Briar Knight, and I have faced beasts the likes of which you've only read about in your tattered scrolls. I'm not going away, and I'm not giving up on him. So make up your mind. Will you help me, or will you hinder me?" Torrid held the medallion up, and for the first time Jala could see how worn his hands were. They were gnarled and covered in scars and lines, appearing much older than his face. He flipped the medallion around in his hands, noting its shine in the firelight, seeming to take in every detail. Jala knew that he was thinking and that he would not speak until he was ready, if ever. Well, she could be just as stubborn if she had to. Finally, Torrid handed the silver amulet back to Jala, a smile on his face. He sighed.
"I have no urge to hinder you. I applaud your efforts and admire your courage. I think that were you to succeed, the result would be preferable to the state of things as they are, or as they could otherwise be. But tell me, if you failed, or worse, you half succeeded and did not live to see the result, how do you think he would react? Do you think he would thank me for allowing you to try?
It doesn't matter. I'm going to do it. He'd do the same for me, and he knew that I'd come if I could. That's why he hid himself in this godforsaken place.
Nowhere is forsaken by the gods. Only man forgets his responsibilities. Very well. I will do what I can. I can provide you with food and other provisions. I have a concoction that will grant you stamina and the ability to heal quickly. Although you will need to eat large meals tonight and tomorrow to use it safely, I can give you herbs and potions to make your scent stronger. The first full moon is tomorrow. If you are set on this path, then you must be ready tomorrow at twilight.
Thank you, Jala said quietly. She had more to say, much more, but she found words difficult, so she kept her peace. The first time Jala realized that Rurik was for her was almost 10 years prior. They had been close to their apprenticeships. Rurik, she knew, would take over for his father, Andin. Rurik was already an expert woodworker and carver, as capable of making small boats, good for navigating the marshes around their home village, as producing sturdy homes, or even fine statues for their simple shrines to the gods. Jala herself would be expected to marry, or to apprentice with one of her aunts or uncles. She had 9 siblings, and 4 of them had already entered the family business of ale production. There simply was not enough work for all of them. Jala, however, had other plans. She hadn't told anyone, not even her closest friend. So like many summer nights before, the two of them would sneak away to go walking through the forest pass by the river, listening to the insects and watching the great marine serpents make their lumbering way back to the ocean, all under the watchful eyes of the stars that were said to govern the fates of everything. This night was special. She had turned 15 3 weeks prior, and he was about to do so himself. 15 was the age when every child was expected to start truly training for their trade. "What's wrong, La?" Jala turned and smiled at her friend. They had been walking in silence for too long, and Rurik knew her too well. Normally, she'd have been talking his ear off.
"Nothing's wrong. I mean, well, what is it?"
Rurik said, turning his face towards her. Even at 15, he was almost 6 feet tall. Jala could not make out his eyes, but she felt his gaze, felt herself responding to it. She was old enough to know what it meant, and why she had to tell him and make him understand.
"I got an apprenticeship."
"Congratulations," Rurik said, but his voice was reserved. He knew there would be a catch.
"With the wardens," Jala added belatedly.
"Oh," Rurik said, shoulders slumping, eyes misting over just slightly. How could so much emotion be in one simple word? He could hide nothing from her. Not that he truly tried, but this was almost too much for her to bear.
"I'll miss you," Jala blurted out, getting everything backwards. "I mean, I'll come back. I have to do this. I want to. I'm good with a bow, and I can track and hunt, and they pay real money. Not copper, but silver,
And, Rurik said. Jala could see his despair. He thought she would be leaving forever. He did not understand her true intent.
And maybe even land and title, but the pay would be enough. Enough for me to come back to you, and..."
Jala ran out of words then. There was silence. Rurik stepped towards her, saying nothing, giving her time to form her thoughts. Then, he reached out and tucked some of her ever-stray blonde hair back behind her ear. His touch shocked her like lightning. As always, she acted without thought, stepping up on her tiptoes and kissed him. He was stunned for a moment and did not react. But when he did, his arms wrapped around her, pulling her up towards him, crushing her wonderfully against him. She felt him grow against her. He was big. Would this be the moment? Then his hug weakened. He swayed, no longer supporting her, but relying on her for balance.
Then he stumbled to his knees. Not now, he whispered. What's wrong? Are you sick? Don't worry. It happens sometimes to me. It's just so damn embarrassing, Rurik said, trying to stand and falling almost. Jala steadied him, though. Kept him upright, her size belaying his strength. He could lean on her all he needed. Come on, Rur, let's get you home. Jala led her friend home, silently and slowly as they walked. He became a little bit steadier, but it was obvious that he was still quite weak. He wouldn't stop apologizing her, which was a bit irritating, but she understood that he had enjoyed the kiss as much as she had, which made her smile when he wasn't looking. Soon they had made it to Rurik's house. His father was away working on a greater project for the Baron, but his mother, Hela, greeted them at the door. She did not seem surprised nor overly worried, which reassured Jala a little. Jala waited patiently in the small kitchen while Hela led her son away and got him to his own bed, before she returned to start to boil water for tea. "Is he going to be all right?" Jala asked. Rurik's mother just finally seemed to notice that the girl was still there, and she smiled wearily.
"Yes, Jala. Yes, he will be fine. It's just his blood that makes things difficult for him."
"His blood?" Hela looked at the girl then, almost in an appraising way. Jala felt that she was being judged, but for what, she could not say. In the end, whatever mental evaluation was going on, Jala had apparently passed, because Hela sat down at the bench and gestured for Jala to sit across from her, as one woman visiting another might, not as just a friend of her son. Hela poured tea for both of them and then continued.
"His blood runs strong, just as yours does, Jala."
"Mine?" Hela smiled.
"Yes, your mother is fiery. She has a temper, and the village can hear it when she fights with your father. But she also calms quickly and forgives and loves strongly. The village can hear that sometimes at night, too, if they happen to be walking by your parents' house."
Jala blushed, having learned long ago to ignore the sounds of her parents' lovemaking, but unsure as to why Hela had brought it up.
"So you mean, like, I inherited my mother's temper?"
Jala said, desperate to change the subject.
"Yes, but you also gained her intense devotion, her loyalty, and intelligence. You have the good and the bad. Rurik is the same. His father, well, his father is a good, calm, strong man, as were his ancestors. My mother, however, was a wolf priestess, one of the last, and she performed the rite with my father Rurik's grandfather. He was one of the last of the Beastkin."
Jala's eyes grew wide. The Beastkin and the wolf priestesses were things of stories, not their boring village.
"Rurik never told me," Jala said, feeling hurt. She'd thought they shared everything.
"Because I told him not to. I told him specifically not to tell you because I knew that he would have otherwise. I am sorry. I thought I was protecting him, but of course he could trust you not to spread such things."
"So, is Rurik Beastkin?"
"No,"
Hela answered, perhaps a bit too quickly.
"Or at least I don't think he is. I had nothing but some dreams, which are common in those who carry this bloodline. In the old days, I would have become a wolf priestess myself, but my mother saw no need for such devotion. My father was, after all, the last of the Beastkin that she had ever met, so the training would have been excessive and wasteful. Instead, she passed her knowledge of healing to me, and recorded the rest in scrolls and books, in case a future woman would need this wisdom."
"Oh," Jala said, almost disappointed. It would have been something if Rurik would have been a Beastkin. For a moment, Jala imagined her large, strong, and gentle friend as an animal that walked as a man. A huge, rampaging monster of legend that could only be appeased by the love of the right person. Jala shivered for a moment, almost uncontrollably, and felt something deep within her respond to the idea. It surprised her with its intensity, but it did not shock her. If nothing else, watching him collapse had convinced her that she wanted to be more than his friend. She wanted to be his wife.
"Rurik has shown few of the signs of the Beastkin, yet, Halo went on. He does, however, have dreams far more intense than mine. He will not speak of them with me, but I know that they are nightmares.
He tells me about them, Jala said, suddenly feeling a bit more confident. But nothing too detailed. He mostly just says that the things that he does in his dreams scare him. Hala nodded as if it made perfect sense for her son to confide in Jala. Perhaps it did.
He also suffers from the blood sickness.
Jala's eyes grew wide. Will he be all right?
Yes, it sounds worse than it is. The spirit of beast and man do not always sit in balance, and so it can make him grow weak, or pass out at times. He feels so embarrassed about it, but I tell him that there is no shame in it. All he can do is rest a bit more, eat a bit better, and by the next day he will be well. It is his burden to bear, and it may last his entire lifetime. In any case, I am grateful that you were there with him when this happened. He would have made it home, I'm sure, but you made things much easier for him.
He felt ashamed when he grew ill, Jala said. But he doesn't have to be. Not in front of me. Not ever. Will you tell him that when he wakes up?
Hala smiled. I will, but you can tell him yourself as well.
Jala had much to think about as she ambled home that night. She had not changed her mind. She would go into the warden's, earn her keep there. She would come back then for Rurik and ask for his hand. If he would give it, then they would find a place to be together. A warden could earn a good salary, even if she did have to travel much. In fact, if she did well enough, she could have lands of her own. Then she could call Rurik to her and make a whole forest her dowry. She smiled at the thought. Jala cleared her mind. Such memories could be dangerous. They might make her underestimate the beast that she had come to face, which could lead to her death. On the other hand, they reminded her of why she was there, of what she could do for Rurik. She smiled bitterly as she considered the changes that she herself had gone through. She had more scars than most women ever would, and was athletic and lean, rather than voluptuous, as men preferred. And of course she had been gone longer than she had planned. He might reject her. He might still be mad at her. He might be in love with another already. It didn't matter. Only Jala could save him. If she could not have what she desired most, then she would settle for that. With effort, she returned her mind to the present. She closed her eyes and knelt, hands on her thighs, breathing slow but steady. As she exhaled, she released her tensions and fear. As she inhaled, she drew in the spirit of the land. Jala did not have the second sight. Not truly, but her masters had taught her that everyone had a third eye that could sense things just beyond sight, and a soul that could commune with the spirits. She allowed her muscles to relax, only maintaining enough tension to remain upright. She felt the land as it rose under her feet, heard the sound of the trees drawing up water from the depths, tasted the cool clouds far above, and touched the searing heat of the magma far below the sleeping mountain. And then she felt the beast. The beast was awake. It was not a good sign. Feral ones were supposed to be less intelligent, less active. They preferred to come out at night and only to hunt and to breed. But this one was awake and alert and prowling. He was not moving recklessly, but softly, quietly on the other side of the mountain. He was miles away, but he would easily be near the druid's house by nightfall. By midnight, when the lunatic rage was truly upon him, he could be in the valley below. That must not happen. Jala's eyes fluttered open. Torrid stood a respectful distance away, eyes placid, a bag over his shoulder and a small vial in his hand. The bag clinged as he set it down, revealing the ceramics within. He handed Jala the vial.
"This is the potion that I described to you. It will grant you endurance and make you faster. It will last perhaps a few hours, and then you will be tired afterwards."
"Thank you," Jala said, setting it in front of her. Torrid went through the bag and drew forth a few small clay pots, sealed with cork and wax.
"These are unguents that will make you more appealing to the beast."
Jala laughed. "Perfume for a shifter? What do they smell like, blood?" Torrid smiled back.
"They themselves have little scent. They will amplify yours." This beast knows you, yes? He will come to you?
Jala felt the heat rise to her face. Why did this old man have to be so direct? Yes, I think he will, unless he's forgotten about me.
I doubt that he has. You did not come all this way for a mere acquaintance.
No.
Very good. I think he will come to you, and then we will see. There is one more matter we must discuss. The beast is more active than I expected.
Jala merely nodded, and Torrid continued.
I thought this could wait until the next lunar cycle, but should you fail, I will have to stop him from entering the valley. I will try to ward him away without hurting him, but should needs must, I will kill him.
Jala stood up, all peace gone from her heart, closing with the old man, who did not flinch. You forbade me from hunting him yesterday. You said he was under your protection, and now you're saying you will kill him?
He is, Torrid agreed, as is the village below. I promised the beast that he would have safety as long as he was no danger to the village, and he made me the promise that should that change, that I would slay him. I will be quick and merciful, assuming that he does not kill me first.
Jala closed her eyes and calmed herself with effort. Yes, of course he would ask you to do that. He would never want to hurt anyone. He was a good man.
Perhaps he will be again, young one. Don't despair. I will stay back and give you time to do what you must. But I will not directly observe.
Jala chuckled as Torrid turned around rather stiffly and walked back to his hut. At least she would have privacy when she died. Jala began to strip. The cool air on her bare skin both woke her up and brought her senses into sharp focus. She opened the small pots and warmed the sticky ointment in her hands. Then she began to apply it to herself. First her arms and then her legs, then her sides and as much of her back and rear as she could reach, then her neck and breasts and belly. It wasn't unpleasant, although she wasn't used to the lotions that the burghers' wives or noble women might wear. She considered the many scars, small and large, that she had picked up over the past few years of her service. If anything, the wardens had been exciting. They had unintentionally prepared her for this. Jala caught her own scent then, that of her body and that of her arousal. Despite all of it, the fear for both herself and Rurik, she felt a deep anticipation at their reunion. The danger didn't matter. Jala dressed herself, but not in her full clothing, only in her underthings, cotton shirt, and deerhide pants. She thought that maybe the latter were a little pointless, but she felt ridiculous being half-naked in the wilderness. Jala took the small vial with her, but left her sword and bow as she strode with what she hoped was confidence further into the wood. Even in the middle of the wild, she wanted privacy for their meeting. She wished that she had had the time and the letters to leave a note for Rurik, in case she did not make it, but he did. She supposed that Torrid would tell him how much she cared for him, should it come to it. Finally, Jala found a large, flat outcropping of rock, still warm from the late-day sun, even in the twilight. She sat on it cross-legged and strangely relaxed. There was nothing to do now but wait. Jala had closed her eyes and entered what her master had called the waking dream. Far from its exotic name, it was simply a technique to gain rest, while still remaining aware, and to an extent, awake. It gave her time to do something that she did not much enjoy in recent days. Think and remember. Jala had visited her home village first. She had a sack of silver which would have served as the dowry to any burgher's or knight's daughter, much less the son of a carpenter. Even a very skilled one. She looked forward to demonstrating to both Rurik's father and mother that she was worthy of their son, that she had made a life for herself, and that she was a good match. Before she had arrived, Jala's concerns were all very mundane. What if he had fallen in love with another? Years had passed, it would be understandable. What if he simply wasn't interested in her? She was no longer youthful and fresh, and had many scars marring her body. And that was to say nothing of how she compared to the women that she had met at inns all over the frontier, who seemed to be overflowing out of their dresses. Jala was compact, athletic, and spry. Rurik was great and strong and gentle, and in her mind, he would have his pick of the village women.
Still, she had told him her intent, and if he had waited, then perhaps there would be a chance. Neither had vowed chastity to each other, although Jala had avoided all romantic and sexual entanglements. There simply wasn't enough time in the Wardens, and who wanted such drama when your life hung in the balance? Not her, in any case. Still, in the long, lonely nights where she would camp alone on the side of the hill, she always ended up using her agile fingers to bring herself to one orgasm after the other, with only one man on her mind. The horror that Jala felt when she arrived home was something that she could never forget. Rurik was gone, and maybe he was beyond rescue. The signs had all been there, Hela had simply not wished to see them, and she passed suddenly of a fever before Rurik truly started the change. First, Rurik had the dreams of fear and passion, then the blood sickness, then the inexplicable mornings where he would find himself in the woods, and finally, the transformation itself. Jala had learned a little about such things in the Wardens, and had interrogated Rurik's father about them when she had returned home to find Rurik himself missing. Andin, for his part, had shared the scrolls of Rurik's grandmother, the wolf priests, and that had filled in most of the rest of the details. The village did not understand what had happened. All they truly understood was that their livestock had died, and Rurik vanished soon after. They blamed angry spirits. Jala wondered, idly, what manner of beast he was. She supposed that it did not matter much. She would prefer that he not be part serpent or bird, but she would still undergo the rite in any case. Jala was well past the point of pretending that she would do anything else, and there he was. Not within physical sight, but within the gaze of her third eye. The great beast that made the whole mountain tremble was approaching, tracking her scent. He was accelerating as he came closer, growing more excited. She felt her own breathing speed up, and not out of fear. Yes, she thought. Come to me, my love. If we can't have it any other way, then let this be our wedding. This bride needs neither garland nor temple, and her groom requires no escort or ring. She smiled despite her own cynicism at the thought. At least after so many years, she would see him. No matter his form, he would still be hers. Jala looked around and saw that the moment had come. Twilight had just tipped from day to dark, and the moon was visible, rising over the peak itself. Jala stood, unstoppered the vial, and drank the druid's potion in one swift gulp. She winced. It was bitter and somehow sweet at the same time, and the smell was acrid. Her stomach roiled in rebellion for a moment, but then stopped. She felt warmth spreading through her limbs, and a tingle that joined with what was already present. She felt a sudden ache, a need to be filled. She wondered if the potion was an aphrodisiac as well. Then again, Jala had suppressed her desire for so long. They had been inconvenient for her in the performance of her duties, though her feelings for Rurik had helped her through some very difficult spots. Her need for him had been impossible at the time, so she had it put away. Now, even in this moment of fear, that need was coming back full force. Jala stretched briefly, readied herself, and waited. She knew the direction he would be approaching from, and now, unaided by special warden techniques, she could hear the chatter of frightened and angry birds, as well as the snapping of twigs and much larger branches. It was coming. He was coming. Jala stood, motionless, on the gentle slope amongst the swaying pines. The night had fallen, but the light of the moon rendered everything easily visible to her well-adjusted eyes. Upslope, she saw the ground squirrels running for cover. Even a deer bounced straight at her, but she did not move, and the doe went around her to the left. Jala was nothing to fear that night, not when the beast was running. And finally, after years, there he was. Jala's breath caught. It was not fear, but love that did it. Terrible, unfulfilled, and sorrowful love. She did not want to die, but far more than that, she wanted Rurik to live. She felt her calm demeanor shake. First, at gut-wrenching emotions that she felt upon seeing him, and secondly, at the awe of him.
Rurik, for even in her mind she could no longer think of him as an it or the beast, stood huge. As a man he was well over 6 foot, but in this hybrid form he was easily 10 feet tall, his head brushing the low branches of the pines. No one would mistake him for an animal any more than they would a man. He stood straight and walked on 2 legs, if a bit hunched over. His fur was deep, rich brown, and as he approached, Jala could see the wind ruffle it. She wondered if it would be rough or soft. His ears protruded from the top of his head, but the outline was not sharp. His fur outlined his muzzle, no longer manlike, but still somewhat stubby compared to what she had expected. Most unnaturally, his eyes gleamed a deep red. And then there were his claws. Easily inches long at the end of still-functional hands, they were terrifying, black and straight as the sword that Jala normally carried. A part of her wished that she had it now, although her voice of reason told her that such a thing, a toy really, would be of no use against Rurik. Only as he began to stride towards her did his gait trigger an understanding of what he truly was. It was a mix of his normal walk and... of course he would be a bear. Great and strong and capable of vast destruction, yet also protective and gentle. Nothing else would have fit Rurik. Jala smiled despite her fear. He was magnificent. And then she saw the rest of him. Yet also protective and gentle. Nothing else would have fit Rurik. Jala smiled despite her fear. He was magnificent. And then she saw the rest of him. Rurik was close now. She'd let him get far too close in her shock and love and terror. Between his legs swung something that to Jala looked more like a weapon than an instrument of pleasure and creation. She almost laughed out loud. How on earth would she, a virgin who knew much about hunting and killing and woodcraft, but almost nothing about sex, take something that size inside of her? It was impossible. It was folly. It was terrifying. Right up until the moment that she saw him, Jala wasn't truly sure what she would do. She had some ideas. She'd read some of Hela's old scrolls, and they gave her some general advice, but there wasn't truly a ritual. She thought she might first try and calm him. Perhaps sing to him? As silly as it sounded now, Rurik had always loved her voice. When she saw him hunched over as he was, eyes and fangs gleaming in the moonlight, great breath huffing steam, she knew only one option. So at last, even as Rurik could almost reach out and touch her, she turned and fled. Although she was not panicked, Jala was afraid. She had become friends with her fear, and it had saved her life before. Now she channeled it, drove it into her. She ran to escape death, but she also ran to attract it. Jala was short, but she was sure-footed, fleet of leg, and more agile than anyone she had ever met. She bound over a fallen log and then ducked under some brush. She ran up onto a rock ledge and then leapt 10 feet down, rolling and springing to her feet naturally and smoothly as a river running its course. She ran almost as fast as the deer that had passed her less than a minute prior. It did not matter. Behind her, the storm of crashing and snapping branches and brush told her that her love was giving chase, and he was not bothering to leap or jump. He did not need to. He only had to move forward. The world would either get out of his way or it would break. Still, Jala ran. At first out of fear, but now something different possessed her. She knew beyond any doubt that Rurik would catch her, but he was her mate. She was certain of it. She would die to prove it. So she would run. Because what would be better foreplay than the kind of love she sought? Jala had hoped that even in the animal cunning that she had seen residing in the eyes of the beast, that there would be a touch of recognition. She thought that there might have been, but she couldn't be sure. She knew, however, that the one thing a true predator like him could not resist was the chase. Either for prey or for a mate. And wasn't she both in the end? In the end, her speed and will and agility, it wasn't enough. Jala heard him closing on her, could even smell his breath. She turned hard to the left, and he struggled to follow.
Jala smiled as she heard him roar in frustration, back claws digging for purchase into the earth, battling the momentum of his own huge form. But her victory was short-lived. Without warning, he was upon her. It wasn't like being tackled by a man. Jala had grappled, been punched, kicked, slashed, clubbed, and even stabbed, and this was still a unique experience. It was as though the mountain itself had tired of her games and fallen upon her. Rurik crashed into her chest and legs, impacting her back and riding her into the ground. Contrary to her expectations, when Jala recovered from the shock of the impact, she found his arms around her and keeping her from falling. She was suspended against his chest. It was his hand. One hand splayed out almost covered the entirety of her torso, crushed her breasts, almost drove the breath from her lungs, pinning her to his own lower belly. And there, between her legs, protruding, was the largest cock she had ever seen. Were her goal to truly escape, she would have attacked him there, knowing that despite his size, that would probably be his weak point. But her goal was not that, and with her one free arm, she reached down, stretched, and her fingers brushed against it. It was so hot that Jala almost jerked her hand back, and Rurik, for his part, emitted a groaning growl that rumbled deep from his chest and shook her body. This was for her, Jala realized truly. Because of her. Rurik did not just want a mate. He wanted his Jala, as she had wanted him. Despite the situation, Jala was grateful. This would be her mating day, even if it was her last. Then Jala was falling, suddenly released. She caught herself easily on her hands and knees and rolled over smoothly, looking up at Rurik and pushing him away instinctively, but not trying to rise. No, she was caught. The chase was over. Now it was time for her to be bred. Rurik loomed over her, then stepped forward and dropped to his knees. For a moment he hesitated, and Jala could see that something warred behind his gleaming red eyes. The man and the beast were fighting, she realized. For once, she hoped the beast would win. It did. Rurik reached down and wrapped his hands around her waist, easily encircling it. Then, with ludicrous ease, he lifted her towards his cock, intending to simply impale her on it swiftly. Quickly, almost frantically, Jala spread herself as widely as possible while reaching down to grasp his cock head and aim it in the correct direction. Rurik did not stop. But when her small hand touched him, he growled. Jala was wet and swollen and ached for him, an almost painful need. She was as ready as she could possibly be. Finally, he was at her entrance, and then Jala yelped. It was one thing to imagine laying with Rurik, as she had done many times in her life. In some of her fantasies, she had even provoked the normally gentle man into pushing her down and fucking her. Roughly. This was beyond anything that she could have imagined. She felt stretched to her limit, close to being broken, and only his head had entered her.
Gods, please!
Jala cried out, understanding that she was begging not to be hurt, but also begging for more, needing more of him. Rurik may have slowed down slightly, but he kept on going, still pushing himself inside of her. It felt like her whole body was changing, simply to accommodate this huge invader. Rurik stood and lifted her up easily. He was shockingly supporting her back, although Jala still had to lift her head to see him. She forced herself to relax internally as much as possible, sensing that she was tight when he started moving. And then he did. Jala had heard other women talking fondly about being taken by their lovers, but this was something else. Rurik thrust inside of her, each stroke long and shaking her small form. She could hear him grunting with the effort, and somehow that aroused her further to hear such noises. He used her, moving her back and forth on his cock like a little doll, a toy. It was terrifying, and Jala's whole body already ached, but still, it was what she wanted. If he finished with her, whether she lived or died, he would be a man again. He would be in control.
"Yes, yes, yes, please, please fuck me," she said. "Breed me."
Jala did not expect the words to have any effect on Rurik, but to her surprise, he had some understanding.
He increased the tempo, groaned with the effort, his great hands squeezing her body, the slick, wet noises of their love making the only other sound she could hear. Something built suddenly within her, and to her surprise, she came. Harder than she had ever before on her fingers, harder than she had ever imagined possible. "Rurik!" she cried as his claws pierced Jala's sides and back as her eyes rolled back in pleasure. She had always known it would be good to be with Rurik, but had never known how it would feel to be taken, to be ravished. All of her life she had been strong, a planner, in charge, and now everything was different. Her life was as a delicate butterfly in Rurik's claws, and she knew it. Should he desire it, Jala would be shredded. His claws dug deep then, and she came again, feeling herself grip tighter at the huge cock invading her so completely. She moaned then. Not the first time, but this was different. It was animalistic. Demanding. It was the moan of a mate who needed more, not less. Rurik reacted by releasing Jala, letting her fall to the wet earth. It was raining now in torrents. She grunted as she landed on her back, the air driven from her lungs. She looked up and saw his massive cock was wet with a mix of her own fluids and his pre-cum. Rurik gave her no time to recover, kneeling and rolling her over onto her front before lifting her up again. He too was lost to desire, and he thrust her none too gently against a nearby tree. Jala held on for dear life. Of all the sensations that Jala would remember, the one that was most surprising to her was how perfect it was. Again and again, his cock forced her open, spreading her wide, filling her beyond capacity. She had her fingers, of course, but this was so different. This body-shaking, impossible, and painful congress felt just right, like she was made to receive it. She came again, feeling the intense heat radiating from him, hearing him grunt and huff as her pussy gripped him. She had lost track of how many that she had experienced, of how much time had passed. "Gods, Rurik," she whispered, her voice small against the sound of their bodies and his harsh breathing. "I love you. I love you. This is for you." She wanted him to know. She willed him to understand. Jala was certain that she would die. And if she did, she wanted him to know that she went willingly. Gladly, even. To Jala's shock, Rurik seemed to understand her. Her words excited him. She moaned and cried out as he impossibly sped up and grew more violent. Her arms failed her and she slumped forward. Instead of falling, she found herself supported, lifted. Again, Rurik had one hand around her waist and the other splayed under her chest. This time, however, Jala was lost in pleasure and fatigue, and her head lolled and she felt like a rag doll in a child's hand.
"Jala."
His impossibly deep voice roared. One word, but with love and need and sorrow. As Jala came back to herself, she felt him swell and cried out in response, coming again immediately. She could feel his seed flowing out of her, down the sides of her thighs, dripping off her dangling feet. Finally satisfied that she had accomplished her goal, Jala passed out. Jala thought she might be dead at first, before she started to hurt. Then she knew that she was still alive. She ached all over and in places she felt the sharper, if less severe, pain of cuts and scrapes. She kept her eyes shut. She could die later after she slept. To her surprise, she felt herself rising, gently, surrounded by soft warmth. She nuzzled into the warmth and felt fur brushing up against her face, tickling her eyelids. He was so gentle, but of course he was her Rurik, and always would be. She remembered nothing after that. Jala woke to the sound of movement, and the scent of Rurik surrounded her. She smiled and nuzzled into it. It was warm and furry, not him, but it was his blanket. He had wrapped her in it to recuperate. Her eyes fluttered open. Sun filtered through some trees and a fire gently crackled. Something good was cooking. Bacon? She could smell it, and bent over the fire, tending to it, was Rurik, she said softly. He stood and spun,
pausing only a moment before bounding over to her in two strides. Then he was over her, gently caressing her hair.
I thought you were going to die. I thought I'd killed you.
There are worse ways to die, Jala said, smiling.
That isn't funny.
It wasn't meant to be. Rurik's face was clouded with frustration. He had changed, Jala thought, for the better. He had matured, his body filled out, grown even taller. He wore simple animal skins stitched together somewhat crudely. His muscles were evident in his forearms, perhaps too much. Jala wondered if he had been eating enough. He had a full beard, but somehow, even in the wilderness, he had kept it neat, if not particularly even. His eyes were still so full of kindness, almost sadness. She had fallen in love with them. Rurik furrowed his brow at her silence and adoring stare.
What you did was... It was...
Rurik said, unable to form the words. It was what needed to be done, Rurik, Jala answered, softly placing her hand on the side of his face. He took it in his own and kissed her palm, gently, as if he were afraid he would break her.
I never wanted to hurt you,
he said quietly.
I've loved you since I understood what the word meant. Maybe before.
Jala's eyes grew wet, and Rurik's face filled with more concern. You must know that I love you the same way, Rurik, Jala said. I could not allow you to be taken by the beast. Not when I knew who you really were. And I could never let you die. If that were your fate, then I would rather die first.
Don't say that.
Jala sat up then, too quickly, and winced, but she was heedless of the pain. Don't tell me what to say. I can't change how I feel, and I won't change what I say to make you comfortable. You would have done the same for me if our positions were reversed. Rurik and Jala's faces were inches apart, and Jala was breathing hard. Couldn't he see that she had saved him? Couldn't he just... And then he leaned in and kissed her. It was gentle and kind. Later, Jala might like a bit of rough play, but for now, it was so good. So perfect. She did not fight it, as Rurik's kiss gently pressed her back into a supine position. And to her surprise, her hands began to explore his chest and wrap around his back, pulling her toward him, on top of her. How was she aroused now, even in pain? It didn't matter. She needed him again. And she knew somehow that he needed her. He needed to show her that he could be more than a monster. That he could be tender and loving. That all sounded very appealing to her at the moment.
Are you sure?
Rurik asked softly. Yes. I need you, Rurik, Jala replied. I need all of you. The beast and the man. Rurik smiled and kissed her again. Jala fumbled at his trousers in her eagerness, and he chuckled at her eagerness. Rurik stood, removing his shirt first, and then his pants. Jala herself was still nude under the warm fur blanket. Jala drank Rurik in with her eyes, as if for the first time. In a way it was. Rurik was muscular, hands rough, as she remembered, but he lacked the slight layer of fat that he normally kept. He was gratifyingly hairy, and to Jala's relief, his erection appeared much more manageable. She could not help but notice the scars he had, however. She was concerned and wanted to ask about them because he was not a warrior but a craftsman. But then she felt him removing the blanket, and at once she felt a virgin again. She blushed, but resisted the urge to cover herself. Jala would not allow herself to be ashamed of her body. She would not pretend to be a noblewoman with soft skin and good manners, but then again, she knew that such a woman could not have satisfied Rurik. She watched him take in her lithe form, her small breasts, slim hips. He knelt over her and ran his fingers through her hair, pulling out some pine needles that remained there from the previous night's activities. Jala saw her own desire reflected in Rurik's eyes, and for the first time she felt truly beautiful. She reached out and pulled him down into a kiss, feeling his rough beard scraping against her as he moved to her neck, kissing and nipping her. Jala gasped at how it made her feel. Where the prior night had been violent passion, the morning was tenderness on both of their parts. It was an exploration for both of them. Jala felt the need to touch every part of Rurik, to absorb his scent, to feel his body pressed on hers as closely as possible. When he entered her, he groaned her name, and then they moved as one. Jala rolled her hips and met her lover's thrusts, and her aches disappeared as she did. When she came, it was like a series of simple waves that took her, and she rode them. Jala sighed as Rurik finished inside her, arms and legs wrapped tightly around him, holding him in place. But he did not. Slowly, almost mournfully, he pulled out of Jala. She rolled over on his chest, and for a time they stayed like that, and everything was right. After rising, dressing, and eating, the two were ready to leave together. It was decided that they would see the druid on the way down. They were making final preparations when Jala suddenly remembered the original reason for her trip. "Do you want to get married?" Jala said, almost offhandedly. She looked at Rurik. He paused, blinked, and for a moment she was worried.
"Yes,"
he said simply. They smiled at each other and then returned to their packing. To others it would have seemed strange, but to them it was just a formality. They had mated the prior night, after all. "We can have the druid do it," Jala noted. Rurik grunted agreement. Jala watched Rurik drinking from his water skin and added, "It would be good to be married before we have children." Rurik sputtered, and Jala laughed as she tied up her pack.
"You want children?"
he asked, eyebrows raised. "Of course I do." Jala found herself strangely anxious now that the conversation was ongoing. Don't you? She thought it was silly. She had become a Briar Knight and fulfilled the rite of the wolf priestesses. How difficult could raising children be?
"Yes, but..."
"But what?"
"What if they turn out like me?"
"Then they'll be strong and good."
"You know what I mean. What if they are beastkin as well?"
Jala turned to face her mate, standing on her tiptoes to kiss him on the lips, before stepping back and smiling up at him. She took his much larger hand in both of her own. "Then we'll need to be sure to train more wolf priestesses, won't we? Your father kept the scrolls he showed me."
"I have no doubt that you could learn to be one and to teach others, but what of the world? It would not treat such children kindly,"
Rurik said. Clearly this was something he had already considered. Jala was not surprised. He did not think quickly, but he did think deeply. "Have faith in me, if not in the world," Jala said. "If we are together, then we can face any challenge." Rurik did not speak, but his smile told Jala everything that she needed to know. She took his hand, and they set out together.